Did you know, and I don't know where I heard this fact, apparently all clowns have their own, like, individual makeup, and you can get, like, banned from the clown societies for copying the same makeup as another clown.
That's very interesting.
It's a little fun tidbit.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me, as always, Keith Foster from San Diego, California.
I just had a Rod moment where you said it and I heard it the opposite way. I just had a Mandela effect to our own intro. You're Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California. And again, this week, we have another special guest, an East Coaster named Mike. Mike.
Another East Coaster named Mike, yes.
Yes. Mike is an improv comic who does a movie review YouTube channel called Gotta Love Them Movies. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. I'm dubbing this Guest-tember. And if I can get two more guests for the end of the month, we will have a full Guest-tember.
That's really fun. We really should have done that for August, though, so it could have been August.
Oh, no, I like mine more.
Oh, Keith.
Fuck we, both of we your love assholes.
You. We love you.
August? That's so good.
It's too on the nose, Keith. Sometimes you have to dig deep into the recesses of language.
Guest-tember.
I don't know.
Guest-tember is better. There's nothing. There's no logical portmanteau there.
Absolutely logical. Mike, I don't know you quite as well as Keith does. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do? I know that you're a comedian improviser over there in New York City. And
yeah, so
what's your deal?
My deal is I work out of the People's Improv Theater here in New York City. So if you ever want to go see an improv show, come to the People's Improv Theater. Plug, plug, plug.
Mm-hmm. The Piet. Do people call it the Piet?
The Piet.
The Piet.
Yeah. You can call it the Piet. I mean, people do generally refer to it as the Pit, but yeah. No, I'm a teacher, teach drop-in classes, every other Saturday. You can come check that out. I've been doing movie reviews for, going on 2 years, I think.
Cool.
I think we're pulling up 2 years now.
So you're also a lover of the cinema.
Oh my goodness. I didn't even know what the term cinephile was until
you had sex with your DVD.
Pretty much. With that little hole right in the middle, it fits perfectly.
You cut your dick all up.
Hey, you know, some people are into that kind of thing.
Keith likes to go especially dark with our guests right out the get-go.
I feel like I don't, though. Like, I feel like that's just... I did try to trick other Mike into saying some slanderous things about the Irish pretty quickly.
Yeah. Pretty much out of the gate. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an asshole.
Well, if you want to make it personal, I'm all for that. But when it involves other cultures and other people, I'm like, you know what? Let them speak for themselves.
I would if I could understand them through their thick, drunken accents.
There you go. There it is. I'm just going to leave that one on the wall.
Thank God for the Irish.
When you started your YouTube channel, I used to do the YouTube thing as well. I had a video show on YouTube for a few years from like 2009 to 2012. I did a show that was a public access show on Pocatello, and I got the file and uploaded it to YouTube called Video Clerks. And I remember having to hustle pretty hard to get any views. And this was back in the old YouTube days when you could post videos as video responses.
Your problem is you don't have enough movie reviews that are 9/11 conspiracy theories.
See, well, nowadays that is definitely the problem. We definitely should have got on the conspiracy theory train much quicker than we did.
Like, secretly hidden in the subtext of Eyes Wide Shut is actually the whole moon landing thing.
Well,
Keith, I'm wagging my finger at you, even though you can't see it, as though to agree with you.
You're not, I was about to say, that whole movie is sort of about the Illuminati, so that's actually not that far off. Like a weird sex cult Illuminati.
But Stanley Kubrick, he knows how to hide those hidden messages.
Room 247, one of my favorites.
247. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's interesting.
Great documentary. But yeah, so how did you get into the YouTube reviewing, and how's it going?
It started with written reviews. There was a girl that I was dating like 3 years ago, and I'm very opinionated when it comes to my films.
Yeah, I am.
I've been a lover of movies ever since I was born. I have a memory of my mother telling me, you know, you can't always watch movies every single weekend when you grow up. And I'm like, why not? Why can't I? That seems like a personal life goal that I want to achieve someday. No, so I just started doing writing reviews on, I started a blog on WordPress called Gotta Love Them Movies. And I did that for a year. I never missed a weekend. I was
right,
perfect.
Right.
Hit every single weekend in that year. And eventually just transferred over. Captain America Civil War, the trailer dropped that day. That's when I recorded my very first YouTube video. And we posted it and got, I don't know, maybe like 100 views or something. And I was like, yeah, cool, awesome. Let's keep doing it. But yeah, you're right. It's rough to keep doing it like every single week, or, you know, even two or three times a week. It's hard.
Right. And the competition. I mean, even when I was doing it, there was a lot less competition than there is now.
Oh, yeah.
There's just everybody's doing movie reviews on YouTube right now. But when I watched a couple of your videos, what you do correctly is you do a lot with your editing. And you add in lots of little animations. You have this cool little sliding scale that you grade everything on. And
oh,
it helps you sort of...
I actually always liked about your channel, Mike, is I've always liked your grading scale. Because it's silly and sort of arbitrary, but also makes sense.
Like, well, that was one of the things that was really bugging me about so many of these movie reviewers. And, you know, people that I love to watch, like Chris Stuckman or Jeremy Johns or even the Screen Junkies, they kind of arbitrarily give it a rating, like A-, I really like this movie, or, oh, I didn't care for it so much, so let's give it a C-, something like that. And I'm like, I guess, yeah, sure. Like, what's the standard? Like, like, how are you grading this? And so I took a lot of time to think about it, and I broke it down into 5 different categories between acting, directing, writing, how effective the movie is, and the overall takeaway. Like, what's the meaning of the film? Like, how can we glean something from this piece of cinema?
Right, right. Yeah. And it also, and like I said, it breaks up the review nicely, so then that way you can kind of move from thing to thing rather than just have to sit there and fill time in front of a camera, which can be difficult and a little awkward when you're doing YouTube videos.
Very true.
See, that's more the Jabber and the Drone method of just talking around the same thing over and over again until we eventually just stop.
Right. I find the piece in editing. I whittle away like an ice sculpture, and then I find the podcast.
Our listeners miss out on so much repetition and gold.
So many weird racist jokes from Keith that don't make it into the show.
But only about the Irish.
Well, in like what you were talking about with the editing, and with all the graphics and the grading scale that at the end with little movie quotes and stuff that pop up, all credit goes to my editor, George Crisiliu. He's the one who makes the magic happen. Yeah, I sit in front of a camera and I, you know, ramble on, but if it wasn't for his editing techniques and the graphics and everything that he adds to it, it just elevates it to a place of something that's actually fun and interesting to watch. So all props go to him, George Crisiliu.
Brilliant. And I wanted to mention, back in the Jabber and the Drone 1.0 days, because we used to do this as once a month, like back in like 2012 or something like that, 2011 maybe, me and the original co-host, Richard Wally.
I ate and consumed his power.
You consumed him.
Is he inside of you somewhere?
He is, and he's fighting his way out.
Ew.
We actually interviewed for one of our episodes we had on as a guest Chris Stuckman, before Chris Stuckman was the multi-subscribed, super famous person on YouTube that he is today.
Pretty big.
Yeah. And it was, we were a pretty mom-and-pop operation then. We were kind of a dog and pony act. I think he felt sort of tricked. But that's okay.
That's like my entire career. It's just like tricking people into thinking I'm more prestigious than I am.
Fake it until you make it and embarrass yourself along the way.
Fake it until you'll never work in this town again.
Fake it until you have a job at Home Depot.
That's what she said?
All right. Today we're going to be reviewing Stephen King's It, or Andy Muschietti's adaptation of Stephen King's It. And we're also not going to be doing a Netflix homework because the dog ate Pete's homework.
Shame.
Shame.
So you'd get that reference if you watched Game of Thrones.
Oh, I got it. I know all the things.
No, you don't.
And next week, maybe for guest Hemmer, we will review Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It. But for today, we're going to get through some backed up movie news.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
You should try to get Chris Stuckman back for guest Ember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
see if he'll come back and, redeem his...
Right.
Anyway.
I sent him another invite a few years ago. I think he was kind of like, nah, I'm good.
And then you went to the two mics on the East Coast. I get it. I get it.
We'll meet again in the middle. All right. So this one, this is a little old, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Warner Brothers is planning a female-led Lord of the Flies, gender-swap Lord of the Flies, the famous novel, which has been adapted into a few different films. I want to say there was maybe a TV movie at one point, and then there was also a 1963 feature. But yeah, what do you guys think of this? I think this is, as far as like the gender swapped, if you want to call it a gimmick, I think this is actually one of the more interesting ones.
I actually am, just from the information we have so far, it is a female-led Lord of the Flies, which Lord of the Flies, in its classic sense, is an inherently male story. So I'm already a little confused. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. There could be an interesting take on it. I'm just saying Lord of the Flies as a story is about boys specifically coming of age. So a female one will be different, which is not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. It's not going to be the same. Also, I'm pretty bummed out that it's going to be written by two dudes. If you're going to do this, you're already going after a subject that is sort of alien to the source material. Because, again, I think the original story is tied to boys coming of age. And now you're... Oh. Like, it feels... sort of like tokenism, like we're exploiting the fact that female-led movies are doing well, which I think is great. Please, let's keep doing the female-led movies. I don't know that this is the one or that this is the way to go about it.
What do you think, Mike?
Here's my thing about gender swapping. Gender swapping for the sake of gender swapping seems very superfluous to me. There doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason except for, either A, we need to do something edgy or different.
Or exploit it. And that's kind of what this feels like to me.
If it's going to have a message that is purely female, like take Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's one of the best examples now because A, it was a great movie, and B, it was a wonderful, no pun intended, movie about what it is to inherently be female and how to be strong and to show that strength as a woman. Everything that went into Wonder Woman was glorious, and it worked so well. So, and it had something to say, and it had something new to say. It was a new, fresh perspective. So if we could get something like that in this kind of a classic tale, classic story, I think it would be important, you know, possibly the same importance level as what Wonder Woman brought to the table. I share many of the same concerns that Keith has in that, especially being that it's being written, the screenplay is being written by two dudes.
And directed. Two guys, like, yeah.
And directed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, inherently, I think Lord of the Flies is a coming-of-age story, right? If it's going to be a female-led version, it should be a female-led coming-of-age story. And it's also, you know, what boys do without any rules. And they don't, you know, they don't understand society.
Because boys act very differently from girls.
Exactly.
And that's where the imagery of the knife versus the conch is really, I mean, not just that you can't do it, because
obviously they are. You already remember way more specifics about this story than I do. I remember a fat kid named Piggy.
Okay, so there's two groups, essentially, that get divvied up on the island, right? So there's like a plane crash or a boat crash or whatever, and there's a whole bunch of kids stranded on this island. Mm-hmm. One kid finds a knife, and another kid finds a conch. So the knife is a symbol of an aggressive leader, whereas the conch is the symbol for someone a little bit more passive, someone who can listen, take the time to analyze a little bit. And so when you have these two groups who are in power, and one group is trying to get the knife because it's not just a symbol of power, it's a symbol of death and aggression. So, and that's where, like, the whole, the Piggy thing, if you know anything about the story, you know, why Piggy's character is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it represents, without giving too much away, the fall of humanity, or the fall of
it's the
society.
Yeah, it's the inability to modern
to protect the vulnerable.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It is might,
yeah,
makes right, is survival of the fittest, which society is against that idea. Conventional civilized society is against the idea, at least it's, yeah, that's what it's supposed to be, is we look out for each other. We take care, you know, being a good citizen means participating in the system and looking out for your fellow citizens and generally trying to make life better for other citizens. And it's not, it can be a selfless act.
See, I don't think that all of that stuff, I get that, yes, male coming of age and toxic masculinity and all of these things play into those plot dynamics, but I don't think they necessarily have to be gendered.
No,
and I think actually the way I would approach this, rather than going a full stop remake, calling it Lord of the Flies, having, you know, however many girls on an island and using the same imagery and all of that stuff, I would go more like the O Brother, Where Art Thou route, where it's a story that's structured like Lord of the Flies and hits a lot of the same plot beats, but maybe takes place in a different setting, like an office setting or something
that. That's already more interesting and not what they're hyping. They're hyping, a movie coming out based on a book that we all had to read in high school. You know, they're trying to sell it on that aspect. It feels exploitive, the fact that it's going to be female-led. It's like they're trying to take advantage of what I think is a really cool movement. I'm not saying it won't be good or interesting. I'm just saying I feel like this movie is already making some bad moves.
I'll be interested to see the casting on this one as this story develops and see, like, who gets attached and some of these things. I'm interested. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Oh, that's usually
I'll have to wait until, like, a trailer comes out. really, mm-hmm. until you can kind of like, because I mean, anything can happen on set, anything can happen with the mm-hmm. script, but until a trailer comes out, that's, yeah. I mean, it's, we can sit here all day and kind of analyze it to death and say, oh, well, oh, I think this and I think this.
You haven't listened to this podcast, have you?
Apparently not enough.
Do we want the next movie?
So where are we going?
Yes, please.
Let's talk about this one. Sam Rockwell is set to play George W. Bush in Adam McKay's Dick Cheney biopic.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen the pictures? They just started releasing pictures of crazy-ass Christian Bale, who has an eating disorder and has made a movie career out of it. And now he's, like, super big, beefing up to play Dick Cheney.
No way. He's playing Dick Cheney?
He's Cheney, yeah.
Weird.
This is news to me. This is the first time I'm hearing this.
So far, I'm into this. I'm generally an Adam McKay fan. I really enjoyed what's it?
The Big Short.
Yeah, The Big Short. And I have a feeling if he's making a Dick Cheney biopic, it's going to be kind of similar in tone to that. Sort of almost tragicomic, which I think there's a lot there to mine. I don't know how I feel about Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney. And you know me.
That seems such an odd choice.
Yeah, I'm a huge Christian Bale fan, but I don't see it yet. But, you know, we've seen him gain weight before.
I've seen him lose weight before.
Yeah, I think he's a talented actor, so I'm honestly more concerned that he's not old enough, but you can do that with makeup, so we'll see about that.
Because neither is Sam Rockwell. I mean, he's closer in age and appearance to George Bush, but I'm looking at the side-by-side that Hollywood Reporter has here on the story, and I'm like, yeah, I can see it.
Mm-hmm. I'm very into Sam Rockwell doing just about anything. And I think he could be turning a pretty good, I think he's got the acting chops and the comedic chops to, portray George W. Bush in a sensitive, humorous, also possibly damning light.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know why Adam McKay is doing this biopic?
Because The Big Short got some end-of-the-year Oscar love, and he's now entered into the second phase of his career, which is the prestige. Serious filmmaker. Well,
it
to an extent.
It seems like such an odd choice, though, especially because I follow... I have the privilege of being friends with him on Facebook.
Oh.
It just seems like, if, based
maybe
off
maybe we
all
could
of
get
stuff,
him for guest timber.
Very fancy.
Get him. Get him. Based on a lot of the stuff that I see in post, it seems like a bizarre story that he would want to tell.
I'm guessing you're saying because a lot of the stuff he posts tends to skew left of center, maybe?
Yeah, very left of center.
Actually,
not just that.
My gut tells me this is going to be kind of if I was to make a Dick Cheney biopic, I would be portraying Dick Cheney as like sort of the ultimate supervillain. So I have a feeling that's kind of where this is going to go.
Yeah, I think there's a decent amount of irony that's going into all this. Adam McKay is a really interesting person, and if you follow him on Facebook, I'm sure you know this, but he wrote for SNL for a really long time before making the film, all those Will Ferrell movies, and kind of getting his Hollywood sea legs. But I think that he has a huge streak of activism in him. A lot of the stuff that he did in SNL was the more political sided stuff. And his personal life, he is a very big left-leaning activist and is very vocal on all social medias about his politics. So I think that, you know, The Big Short definitely is in that wheelhouse of as far as his more of his kind of personal interests in the world at large. He's kind of tapping into whatever his writerly obsessions are. And I think this movie is going to succeed in the same way. I think that this and The Big Short is a new direction for McKay that sort of marries his love of comedy and absurdism and sort of how that plays into the absurdity of our political system.
Well, if it's definitely going to tackle it from the angle of like using Dick Cheney as a supervillain, that I could definitely get behind. I can see why, like, what his motivations would be. Again, I'll just have to wait for the trailer to come out and see what kind of a film this turns out to be.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, my only frame of reference is Oliver Stone's W.
That, because there was like a period in the, like, just after, I don't even remember actually. I'm not going to say a date because I'm really bad with those. But there was a point in time when like Hollywood really wanted to do kind of a tell-all about the Bush administration. There was that movie W.
Oh,
there was
the Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah, there was another one too, wasn't there?
Well, I mean, there was
maybe
like,
on HBO.
I think there was a Swing State and a few other things that came out around then.
Yeah, and there was.
But it wasn't about Bush specifically, but sort of that about
there
that
was
era.
A Sarah Palin movie.
Yeah.
I swear there was another one that was very Bush centric, but I can't remember exactly. But I feel like now is sort of a better time for that story. I think mm-hmm. we're a little more removed from it. Back when we were sort of. I think it, when like W came out, we were still kind of trying to figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. And you know,
I think it came out before he was even out of office.
Yeah,
I want to say he was like
the only
his...
movie that was ever about an American president that came out during their administration.
Right, exactly, right. And I feel like it was just it'd be like if you know the Trump movie got made now. I don't think they're exactly comparable, especially how insane the last year has been. But, you know what I mean? I think it was a little too fresh. Like, there wasn't really a perspective about what his administration would really mean. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, I think it's like, there's enough
now
time.
Now we have more
removed.
Context.
Yeah, we have an idea of what was going on then politically and mm-hmm. and so I'm very interested. I mean I agree, you know, once we start to see more about it we'll get a better idea of what type of movie it's going to be, because it could be slapstick goofball, which I'm not opposed to that either. I'm pretty optimistic about this one though.
Yeah, I think
even if it just came across as like a buddy comedy like Step Brothers, that would be a movie that I would love to see.
Yeah.
Last story, and this just popped up today. We finally settled this episode 9 Star Wars conundrum. They just dropped Colin Trevorrow last week. I am not actually 100% sure. I guess it was creative differences or something like that. And we were kind of bantering about who we thought we might replace him. And I had hoped that Steven Spielberg would step in because he's never done a Star Wars movie before. But I kind of knew in the back of my head that J.J. Abrams was going to step in, and he has, to write and direct.
Well, I think the two clear obvious choices were either J.J. Abrams or Rian Johnson. And right. Especially being that Rian Johnson is just finishing, I mean, he's not even quite finished with Last Jedi yet. I don't know what the turnaround time between ending or doing post-production and then starting pre-production for episode 9 would be.
Well, it used to be that they would take turnaround. Like a couple of years, but now it's like they have to start the next one before the...
So for me, logic just says J.J. Abrams, because he's not doing anything right now. Yeah, sure, he's producing a whole bunch of stuff, but you know, he's not directing anything, to my knowledge. So kind of make... And plus, it's the safe bet, too. Like, Force Awakens was a solid, solid film. Whether you liked it or you didn't, it cleared the $2 billion range.
Mm-hmm.
It made a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairly safe bet to bring back J.J. Abrams. Plus, I think there are some redeeming... reasons that he would want to come back and try to do a little bit differently on a Star Wars film.
Yeah, I'm not against this. I liked The Force Awakens quite a bit. I totally understand the criticisms about it being too much of a rehash of A New Hope. I'm not going to say that's invalid. Like, if someone watched Star Wars Force Awakens and that's what they got out of it and were disappointed, I cannot say they're wrong. I really enjoyed it. I actually thought it was kind of a good way to do sort of a soft reboot, clean the prequel palette, get us back into, you know, because it felt like a Star Wars movie, whereas the prequels...
It really did.
Yeah, and I don't think the prequels ever did. They never felt like the same to me. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm not against it. I do hope that he steps up to the occasion, though. Now that we're at episode 9, it's the closing of this new trilogy, I hope he does push himself, you know, because I think the biggest criticism about J.J. Abrams is he's Diet Spielberg and that he borrows so much from his influences that sometimes I think there's a question of whether or not there is a J.J. Abrams or if he's just the amalgamation of all the things we all love. And so I would like to see him put his definitive stamp on Star Wars. I hope he does. I hope he rises to the occasion. I think he's definitely capable of it.
Well, you know, it's the same thing with comedy, though, isn't it? Like, Keith, you're a comedian.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know that there's only so much information that the universe can hold. And with the amount of comedians or even storytellers, for that matter, going around and around and around in circles, you can only extrapolate X amount of information. So eventually there is going to be crossover. And yes, you are going to be influenced by the things that came before.
I'm not against crossover or even seeing influences. There are times with J.J. Abrams where I would like to see more of him in it. You know what I mean?
Whatever sure, him yeah. may be. No, I agree with everything you're saying there, Keith. And I think that, I feel like these movies are, you know, I think we talked about this last week also about how this is such a studio driven thing that you can really probably slot in anybody who's a halfway competent director and you're going to get a pretty similar result. And I think that, you know, these movies have been plotted out. There's a giant chalkboard somewhere with the whole arc of the trilogy on there, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no big surprises. I don't think, you know, short of getting a true madman like a David Lynch or somebody in to direct the third
yeah.
one.
Oh, yeah. Which? Fucking give me that nonsense. Give me 45 minutes of just like staring into the reflection of Darth Vader's helmet and there's like a fucking lesbian sex scene going on that you can vaguely see in the reflection, and then it turns out there's
so now we know who Keith's choice to direct right. episode.
Oh my god,
be.
I would.
He was approached back in the 80s to do Return of the Jedi, and then ended up doing Dune instead.
I would be so sad for the canon, but so into the crazy clusterfuck that would come out of it. It'd be amazing.
Short of that, I think that, you know, Abrams is going to come and do the job. I think he isn't as pumped on Star Wars now as he was now that he got it out of his system.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's going to be competent and at the very least consistent.
And honestly, maybe it's a good thing that he got The Force Awakens out so that sort of pressure is off. Mm-hmm. And maybe he can approach it with sort of fresh eyes. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, because the stakes are a little lower once you've done two Star Wars movies, right?
Sure.
I don't know. I will say my parting thought on this is I am excited to hear that it's him instead of Trevorrow. I was never totally stoked on Trevorrow doing it. We talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I have more faith in J.J. Abrams I dug The Force Awakens, and I'm just excited to see what happens.
Yep.
I'm sure it's going to be a great movie, no matter what. Yeah, I mean, I would have been interested to see what Colin Trevorrow would have done. That being said, I'm not heartbroken that he's been asked to leave. I don't know. It'll be fine. I know it's going to be a good movie. It's going to be, I dare even say, a great movie. It'll be good. Mm-hmm. It'll be good. There's no way it's not going to be good.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think you know, especially if Ryan Johnson's entry sticks its landing, and depending on, you know, the direction that all of this is supposed to go in, I think whatever it ends up being is probably the closest to the original vision from the get-go.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd agree with that.
Okay, well, let's get into it.
Cool.
This week's movie review, and this is a long time coming. I've been reading about this reboot or remake, or you know, we could even call it the first true cinematic adaptation, since the original was a TV movie, and most people seem to forget that. Mm-hmm. So this is the first real It film, and for a little while it was in the hands of Cary Fukunaga, who directed the True Detective series, the first season of True Detective, and also did Jane Eyre and a few other movies. And he had developed it for a little while, and somehow he sort of, his vision of it was a little too off kilter, a little too.
I'll let you guys hash out the details. I'm just here to for the fun.
But yeah, Andrew Muschietti, who made a short called Mama that Guillermo del Toro sort of discovered and gave him a bunch of money to make into a feature, was, you know, kind of a ghost horror sort of gothic thing that was all right. We reviewed it on the podcast, I think, when that came out, and it was a sufficient genre thriller. And having him attached to this, to the this long-awaited Stephen King adaptation, you know, we kind of knew, I think, sort of what direction the studio preferred over Fukunaga, who tends to naturalize his content a little bit more. But yeah, you know, what's sort of every, I think everyone sort of knows the story, right? A group of kids who live in a small town in Maine are terrorized by a demon clown entity that's been there for decades, appears every 27 years to kill children primarily. And they are sort of the town losers, and they band together to decide they're going to kill the thing once and for all. This is one half of the total story. It's a novel is a tome. It's over 1,000 pages long and goes into both the adult characters and then them kind of going back in the flashback. Mm-hmm. This movie.
Yeah, this movie's just the kids' story.
Just the kids' stuff. Yeah, this is, they've streamlined it. They've taken out all of the stuff as them as adults. And, of course, there's going to be a part two. They've already called this at the very end of the movie. In the end credits, you see volume one. So they will do the second half of the story. But, hot takes, just to start out with, what did everyone think of Andy Muschietti's It?
Scared me to death.
Really?
Well, all right.
Actually, before we get into the nitty gritties, what's your
scares me to death.
So are you into horror generally, or can you handle it?
No,
or
like, no, I'm not. I think there's only ever been three horror films that I've seen in theaters. The first. Technically is a thriller, The Sixth Sense. Okay. The second one was The Descent.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one, though.
Was It. I only went to The Descent because my best friend drugged me to the theater, and 10 minutes after the credits stopped rolling, I was still white-knuckled to the chair.
Yeah! God damn, I wish I could have seen this with you.
I was terrified. Even with, I'll go into that in a second, but... No, I don't do scary movies. I don't do horror. It's not one of those genres that speaks to me, A. And B, it terrifies the living shit out of me. I can't do it.
I will say...
I'm such a scaredy cat.
And I think you know this, Cassidy. I'm not like a horror hound. Mm-hmm. I like a horror movie with substance. Like, I like something that gives me scares, but balances it with story. Like, I hate... I'm not a fan of jump scares. I'm not a fan of a lot of the recent trend in horror movies. I'm more into like 70s and 80s horror. And I think horror in sort of post The Ring horror has lost a lot of its charm. But I feel like I have to set up how I watched this movie before I really get into my thoughts on it. So there's a theater here that has these chairs that vibrate with the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking about 40X?
Yeah, yeah. So I've never done it. I've never been particularly interested in doing it. I've always been like, okay, that's kind of a dumb gimmick or whatever.
It is.
So we went to a theater that has some normal seating and some of these 40X seatings. And we got our tickets online, but I was waiting for my friends Andrew and Dan to show up, and they were late, and so, of course, all the seats were taken, except the 40X, which is really weird. It was a whole thing, and so we were like, because the 40X cost extra,
right?
But we paid normal ticket prices, and all the normal seats were taken, so we were like, what do you mean? Like, we paid for seats, there's no seats for us. So we sort of got upgraded for free.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? I'm never gonna pay for this, ever. My initial reaction was, no, I don't want this like chair vibrating whenever something scary is gonna happen.
Yeah, says a person who doesn't like jump scares.
Yeah. But I was like, no. Exactly. I was like, I was genuinely too freaked out to do it at first. But like 5 minutes into the movie, I'm like, I'm never going to pay for this service. And honestly, this is kind of the perfect movie to experience this with. So I turned it up. And the first 20 minutes were very distracting because it's like you're getting shaked. And it's sort of like if you're watching a movie and someone's just shaking the chair you're in every once in a while. It's kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. But as it got used to it, it turned out to be kind of fun.
Okay. All right. I think that 40X thing, like the buzzing seats, I know it was kind of used in like video games where the controller would buzz. I remember that was a thing for a little while. Maybe it still is. It goes back as far as the William Castle movies from the 50s where he would actually, along with the reels, would come these electric buzzers that the staff of the theaters would have to install in certain seats. And they would tell the projectionist when to press the button to make the buzzers go off.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
That storyline was highlighted
in the gimmick.
Wasn't that in the whole premise of the movie Matinee with John Goodman?
I never saw that, but maybe.
It's been so long since I've seen that.
For anyone who's listening, go watch Matinee, come back and let us know.
Yeah, tweet us. Tweet us about it. Tell us on Facebook.
At Jabber Podcast. I guess now we'll get into it. What did you guys think of the movie?
Scared me to death.
First I'm going to preface this with, because it might sound like I'm about to gush about the movie, because I did enjoy it a lot.
Okay.
But
all right.
I did have some issues with it. So I'm going to start with my issues, and then I'm going to kind of talk about what that means. I had some issues with some of the pacing of the movie. I felt like it was a little too intense throughout, and that cut down on the intensity a little bit.
You're saying it was too intense from start to finish?
Yeah. Like, so I felt like there wasn't enough of a build. It was sort of my problem with the movie The Grudge, where it's just like you're being bombarded with scary stuff so much that it starts to lose its effect. I felt like the pacing.
I would disagree with that, but I'm willing to go along with you.
All right. I think it was just kind of a general pacing issue. Like I could have used a few more non-scary moments. Because at a certain point, about halfway through the movie, I knew that every scene was going to be kind of intense from here on out, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
And I think just maybe they could have got some more mileage out of some of the horror had that pacing just been dulled up a little bit. My other big issue, and I've kind of stewed on this one because I don't know if it's really an issue or not, but when I was watching it, it really bugged me how the parents were portrayed. And I think maybe that's part of the pacing and tonal issues. And I get what they were going for in that, you know, and there's some mild spoilers about to be happening, but that there was some abuse with some of the kids, you know, some mental abuse, some sexual abuse, some physical abuse. And I felt like the parents were played so broadly evil that it sort of, you know, there's this message of, you know, there are real world monsters and, mm-hmm. and they're just as bad as this nightmare clown, if not worse, because can the children really defeat them without, you know, without just leaving or whatever. And I felt like there could have been some more subtlety there. I felt like they kind of beat that message over our heads, like, no, get it? Her dad's really evil. And so maybe that's where some of the pacing could have been a little more subtle. So those were kind of my two big issues with it. That being said, I love me a charismatic horror villain. And I feel like we haven't gotten one in a long time. This was like Freddy fucking Krueger. I was so into Bill Skarsgård. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As Pennywise.
I loved how his eyes were crooked.
Yeah. Oh, I loved everything about him. I remember from the trailers and the initial sort of concept design of him. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, he's too scary. He's too nightmarish. Like, there's nothing seductive about him. But then just like watching this sort of mischievous, playful horror monster hunting these children, I was like, oh no, I totally get it. I was so into his portrayal of Pennywise, and the movie's portrayal of Pennywise is just this.
He's like a demented version of Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. This looming, ominous, like, threat, but it's still kind of weird and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Freddy Krueger, because this is produced by the now resurrected New Line Cinema, which was the house that Freddy built.
The house mm-hmm. that Freddy built, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that whether intentionally or not, there's a lot of the horror set pieces in this movie, specifically the stuff on Niebolt Street, the gothic horror house, the rundown mm-hmm. house that the monster kind of lives in. There's some stuff in there, like with the three doors, it says, you know, not scary, very scary. Like, that's straight out of a Freddy movie.
Yeah, and I ate that shit up. I was simultaneously scared and in love with Pennywise. I thought he was exactly what I like in a horror movie monster. He was charismatic and funny and sinister and scary as fuck.
Well, Cassidy, in regard to what you were saying about, like, with the three doors,
mm-hmm.
and if you haven't seen it, you'll figure it out. You'll see what that's all about. But the comedy in this movie was something that really took me by surprise. Like, yes, it's a scary movie. Yes, this movie has a lot of heart and warmth to it, uh-huh. but it's also really genuinely hysterically funny.
Yeah.
And not just like, oh, it's funny in a few places. Haha. No, it's barrel roll laughs.
That one really line, funny. The gazebo line, that was a guffaw for me. Like, I belly laughed at that one.
Yeah. And I think that's another reason I liked this movie was it's a horror movie that gives a shit about its protagonists. They're not just victim fodder. And I think that's largely in part, a testament to Stephen King's writing, that these characters translate to screen, even with stuff cut, even with stuff flipped around. I think we still got the essence of these latchkey, summer kids. Even the ones that didn't get as much screen time, I felt like I had a pretty good handle on them. Like, I still cared what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the strengths of the movie as well. And I think they achieved that a lot through the humor.
Well, I think it did really, really well. There's a lot of this kind of like post Spielberg or Spielberg nostalgia stuff happening right now. And I think a lot of what's happening in this movie is sort of in conversation with Stranger Things, which just recently was very, very successful. We even have one of the actors from the show.
Do we think that Finn Wolfhard is going to grow up thinking he lived in the 80s?
Maybe, possible. Or maybe he already does, and this is their way of like keeping him in his Truman Show.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe he has a weird learning disability, like decade Asia, where he feels like he's born in the wrong decade. So these movie studios are built around him.
He has to do all of his homework on like an old Mac that's like the size of a TV set. But anyway, what I think
Atari in his mom's basement.
Yeah.
What I think that movies like Super 8. Which did a lot of this stuff a while ago, and everyone kind of forgot about that movie. But speaking of J.J. Abrams, and what I think that Stranger Things does, and what I think this movie does really well, is it gets that Spielbergian wonder and fear and anxiety of being a preteen boy, and like hanging out with your friends and being out
and
in the summer. And girl, yes, there is a female character that plays very prominently in the story.
I'm not totally familiar with source material. Mm-hmm. I've never read it. I only seen the 90s movie. Mm-hmm. That was a while ago. I don't remember Beverly being such a strong character in the previous movie. So I really liked that.
She's very, I've read a good chunk of the book. It's difficult. I'm still making my way through it. On audiobook. It's super long, but what I've read of it, they did a really good job at like getting all these characters down. And when you kind of roll the dice with younger actors like this, because you're dealing with, is it raw talent or is it professional craft? And I think given the cast that they have, everybody, all the kids, I think across the board are really good and really believable. Yeah. And they really like, those jump scares and that kind of stuff. Jaden Lieberer, who plays sort of the unofficial main character here, Stuttering Bill. He's been in a few movies kind of recently.
I was really impressed with him because I felt like his stutter seemed very genuine. And when it would sort of fade away when he was, summoning his courage to face Pennywise.
When he was less scared,
Yeah,
and that's all stuff that comes from the source material as well. So, I get a good sense of who each character is and what their thing is, and I think all of the dramatic stuff really works a lot. But I do agree with you, Keith, that I think this movie has pacing problems, and I think I think all of my problems with the movie really come down to the decision that the studio made to streamline it in the way that they decided to do it. It's like you have the Jenga stack, and they just sort of pulled out all of the scenes of them as adults, and what you have is something a little less structurally sound because of it. I had a problem sort of toward the middle of the movie when it got into, I guess, the horror stuff. When you're still introducing each character individually, it kind of felt like we were getting the same scene over and over again, where it's like they're hanging out, and then one of them walks away, like, see you later, guys, and then he has his little encounter with Pennywise, and then we have another scene with them hanging out, and then see you later, guys, and then he has his little scene with Pennywise, and it just kind of goes like that for a while, and it feels kind of episodic.
I understand where you're going with that. I get it from the standpoint that, like, so Pennywise is a character that feeds off of each person's fears, right?
Right, right.
And so you have to illustrate why each person is being attacked the way that they are. So in that regard, I understand why they're doing it. From like, cause I have no bearing of any, source material whatsoever. I haven't seen the TV movie thing series that they did.
Sure.
I never read the book.
It's really dated. I mean, I will say this, this movie is
far
way
and away better. Yeah. And
I loved it.
That might be blasphemy to say to some people who still hold up that.
Hey, I love Tim Curry's Pennywise.
He's great.
It's sort of campy. I'm gonna get your kids. but
can you do that one more time, Keith?
I'm gonna get your kids.
I want to make a meme of that, of just that.
Please do.
I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'll do it.
No, I understand the structural reasons why they have to show each kid and why they have to part of knowing who they are and what their trauma is, because this is all a metaphor about childhood trauma. But I think that there could have been a way to integrate these scenes or to split them up a little bit differently. And I think, unfortunately, I know why they wrote the movie the way they did is because they weren't sure if they were going to get a sequel. Of course, the movie's made $1 jillion and they should have known that it would. I saw that coming a mile away. I knew this was going to break records and might be one of like the highest grossing R-rated movies of all time because I've followed this buzz for so long. But they didn't know. They didn't have the faith in it. So they couldn't cast any of their adult counterparts. And so that way you have to remove the framing device of them getting the phone call and hearing, oh shit, you got to go back home. And unfortunately, that is a big part of the build of the story is knowing that a lot of them have forgotten what happened. They've repressed it. A lot of them have moved on with their lives and a lot of them have moved on with their idiosyncrasies and their fears and their trauma. And now they're being sucked back into it. And that context makes the movie feel bigger than what I think it ultimately ends up being, which is a pretty good monster movie, but not a whole lot more.
And I think, I think even if they didn't know they were going to get a sequel, I still think they should have left that framing device in. Like, I think they could have still started when they were adults and then had the whole thing be sort of a flashback. But I think that takes some of the tension away. Because, you know, you kind of have an idea of some of the characters surviving. So I kind of get that as well. I think maybe just vary the scares a little more. Because I agree. When we're starting to get these character introductions, I think that's what I'm talking about with the pacing, was it started to feel a little repetitive. Mm-hmm. And then I think it picked right back up.
There's once some like individually, all of these set pieces are really cool and really scary. And actually, one of my favorite things in here is when the character of Richie? No, not Richie. The Jewish one. I'm sorry, Stanley. He's like going through his bar mitzvah thing, and there's this really scary painting. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Muschietti kind of like throws his little hat in the ring, and the painting is very, very similar to the creature design in Mama.
Oh, okay.
With the eyes and the opposite sides of the face and everything.
Nice.
Well, one of the things, I was having this conversation with my editor earlier today about that painting specifically, was that, and one of the points that he kept bringing up was that the use of CGI in this film wasn't necessarily put to its best efforts. Like, okay, granted, there's a lot of stuff that you have to do in a movie like this with CGI.
Sure.
But I feel like there are ways, and so does he feels like there are ways to do some of these things that look a little less CGI-y.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think they almost kind of overexpose Pennywise. As cool as he is, there's one of my favorite scenes in the book, and I knew it wasn't going to end up in the movie because it's too literary in its nature. But there's a scene where Ben Hanscom, the chubby kid, he goes to bed and he has this dream about finally like being on the baseball field and like being able to hit a home run out of the park, and everyone's lifting him up and saying hip, you know, hip, hip, hooray, and all of the stuff, and he gets to be the hero of his dream. And then in his dream, he looks over, and Pennywise is on the opposite side, just on the other side of the fence, staring at him. And when he wakes up, his pillow is completely soaked because he's been crying all night. That's the type of fear that I was hoping a little bit more of. And instead, they kind of go with, like, funny, cool, kind of scary, very scary to some people, horror set pieces.
I also think there were little moments in the 90s movie that had, like, Pennywise pop up that did have this sort of, like, quirky thing. Like, when he pops out of the shower drain and he, like... and they kind of had that, like, there was the moment when Mike... the black kid.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah, Mike. When he's getting beat up by the bullies and he, like, looks over and Pennywise is just, like, chewing on an arm.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny. Like, I would have liked a few more of those kind of quick cuts like that. Just kind of very...
more of that, like, subtle, like, corner of the eye, corner of the frame kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would have liked a little more of that. But, you know, this is getting nitpicky.
It is, for what's ultimately a pretty good movie.
I'll say it's a pretty good movie, but I thought it was a great horror movie. Because I set my standards a little differently for horror. This is exactly the type of horror movie I love. Like, I honestly, I've just kind of been thinking about it since I saw it, and I want to see it again, because...
Wow.
It was scary and fun at the same time. It was Halloween, the movie, to me. Mm-hmm. Like, there was enough thrills and nostalgia and monster and genuine scares mixed with some pretty great humor that I was like, I was really in it. Like, I had to... Structurally, is it perfect? No. I do think splitting the movies between the young kids and the old people is an interesting choice. I'm curious to see if the second one will have sort of the same sense of fun. Because generally, the adult story is a lot more bleak than the childhood story.
Right.
Coming at it from a perspective of, because I never knew the source material, I don't have any background with it, so the cutting point where they cut the movie, where they ended the movie, I thought was perfect. It made perfect sense to me.
Sure, yeah.
Not having any frame of reference to anything in terms of what
I think the book is kind of split into two halves. Like, you get the framing device of them as adults, and they kind of remember the story, their childhood story, as the adult story goes on. But the
book is very impressionistic. Like, there'll be a chapter of them as kids, and then there'll be a chapter that's just extra textual stuff, like a book within a book of the history of Derry, and then there'll be a chapter of them as adults, and then there'll be another chapter of them as kids, and then the two big threads of the story of them defeating the creature, those are in larger chunks, like one after the other. But it is kind of split up in a way that you can do with a book.
I also hope we get a little bit more of the history of Derry in the second one. I think we touched on it a little bit in this one, and that's one of my favorite aspects of it as a story. Is I love the thought of a haunted town, you know, a cursed town, and just. I think there's such rich lore there that I hope we get a little bit more of that.
It plays into the themes of, like, you know, leaving the place where you were nobody and going to become somebody.
Yeah. So, Mike, I'm curious, because I haven't watched your YouTube review. I'd like to hear your grading scale.
Yeah, what was your sliding scale on this?
So the sliding scale, the overall... score I gave it was 90 out of 100.
So pretty high.
I thought it was
nice,
excellent. Mm-hmm. Of course, you break it down between, like, acting and directing and writing and all that. Each category did what it was really meant to do. I think the acting was a little it was really good, mm-hmm. but there were a few moments that I was just like, eh, could the kids aren't exactly acting in a manner that I see to be reasonable or rational when they're placed in that situation. So I was like, eh, so took right. a few marks off. The directing I thought was spectacular. Maybe some of the CGI choices kind of knocked the score down to, I think it was like an 18 mm-hmm. out of 20, something like that. Writing, I can't remember what I gave writing, but I thought it was excellent. I know effectiveness, I gave a solid 20 out of 20 because it did exactly what it set out to do. And one of the things that I loved about this film that really impressed me, especially someone who doesn't care for the horror genre, who is terrified of the horror genre, is that this wasn't... Yes, it's a scary movie. Yes, it's a horror movie, but that's not what it's about. It's about friendship. Uh-huh, it's about mm-hmm. these kids coming together, learning what friendship is, learning what it looks like, learning how to be a friend uh-huh. to someone else. And it's okay to have differences. There's a scene where a main character punches another main character in the face. And it's like that scene in Stranger Things where, can't think of his name. The black kid in Stranger Things.
Apparently, here's a fun little bit of trivia tidbit that will make a lot of sense is apparently the Duffer brothers were originally working up a treatment for it.
Truth.
But it didn't get approved because they didn't have the experience. And so they...
Who are the Duffer brothers?
Yeah. So that's why they did Stranger Things was because... Once you know that, like, that reference stands out a lot more to me than when I first watched it.
It mm-hmm. turns out to be very bittersweet. Uh-huh. Yeah. Very bittersweet. But yeah, the effectiveness, it just did what it meant to do, so.
Yeah. You talked about, like, friendship and togetherness. There's, I've been reading some articles that are attributing the movie's success to that, like, you know, just how divided and frustrated as a nation we are. Like,
I've read those articles too. That is a huge ass stretch. I mean,
I you know what? It is and it isn't. I get it. And I remember when I said with La La Land that we're going to see a lot more positivity in movies. I'm telling you, man, this is part of that.
No, believe me, I'm the guy who I love to find subtext in just about anything. Like, there's nothing more that I love than to create ridiculous theories that are based in nothing. But I can't with this one. The lead up to this movie has been going on for so long, and the source material is so popular.
No. I'm not saying that they wrote that it with. I'm not saying that the movie wrote or even directed that with in mind, mm-hmm. but that message is connecting with audiences because
saying that they focused more on the friendship than they did on the horror aspect.
No, I'm saying the movie did exactly what the movie was gonna do, but part of the reason that audiences have been connecting is because that is there.
I disagree. I think this movie was gonna do well regardless.
Yeah, it was gonna do well, but it like tripled its expected box office weekend or something.
I saw this coming.
Yeah, I know you did, but fuck you.
I mean, okay.
I think anyone can kind of sit back and say, you know, this is a highly anticipated film. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew what it was going to be. I mean, we even saw the trailers are very different from what the movie is, because I saw the trailers and I wasn't creeped out or scared by the trailers, and I saw all of them and I'm like, yeah, there's some creepy, scary moments in the trailers, but I feel like me, myself, someone who doesn't like horror movies, yeah, I could probably sit through this movie. Now, having done it, I'm kind of regretful of that because that's very... It is very scary, and I've had nightmares every night of the week, except for last night.
Oh, no.
It's true. I've had some very bad night sleeps. But
has it appeared in any of them?
Two nights ago, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The projector scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool. I feel like that is a horror trope that's been kind of played a lot lately, and I feel like this movie did it really well.
Mm-hmm. It did.
It reminded me of the home video stuff, home video footage stuff in the Sinister movie, the first one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
I think this movie is a little Blumhouse-y in its presentation. It's kind of slick in the way that like some of those movies are. And I think it takes a little bit of its horror cues from some of those traditional haunted house things. But I think that it uses them to good effect for the most part. There is a scene at the end with some dancing that's questionable. It's kind of deflating.
See, I liked that. I liked it because, again, from my perspective, mm-hmm. it helped to kind of settle my fears a little bit. Anytime Pennywise was on the screen, mm-hmm. I could see the monster in front of me, and I'm like, okay, it can bare its teeth, it can rip me to shreds, mm-hmm. but I can see it coming, and I know what I'm getting into, as opposed to, where is he? Where is he? Is he around the corner? Is he coming after me?
I think that also, that's also the creature's power.
Right.
I think the movie could have played that up more even, because, you know, at the beginning, when he is just sort of a lurking shadow, when he's just an it, the menace is a lot more real, and he's at his most powerful because he's feeding off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the more you see him, you know, sort of the less scary he gets, and that's how he loses his power, he loses their fear, and that's how they ultimately defeat them. And I think I would have liked to see the movie play that up a little more even. I think that's cool that worked for you, Mike. It didn't totally for me, and I kind of wish it had, but...
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's interesting, the way that you bring that up, that it has a kind of a thematic purpose. That's sort of interesting. But yeah, that's why I was saying I would have liked a little bit more of corner of the frame stuff for the first half, especially. But no, I you know, as much as I'm kind of nitpicking, I think the reason I'm nitpicking is because it gets it so close. And I liked it a whole lot. I wanted to love it, but I think it's very solid.
See, I came out of it kind of saying what you are, Cass. Like, when I came out of it, I was like, I liked it, but I wanted to love it. And the more I've sort of stewed on it, the more I'm going to say I loved it.
All right.
Like it's haunted me in a good way, in a way that I just want to see it again.
It tapped into your imagination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a way that a horror movie has not done for me in a long time. Normally, I think they're either kind of boring or kind of gross or kind of dumb,
mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, they're particularly good. Like, Get Out was one of the, you know, obviously one of the standouts this year.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a whole lot of fun with it.
I could totally get behind that. I also had a lot of fun. I really liked it. I probably won't see it again because I need my sleep. But there, you know, that being said, I have had kind of a nagging feeling to be like, I'd kind of like to rewatch many parts of this movie again. It is very fun.
Yeah, and just remember, Mike, if you are afraid of him, you're only giving him power.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I can keep my distance. He can stay in the sewer. I'll stay in my fifth floor Manhattan apartment. That's cool.
Mike, do you want any popcorn?
I think we have a new meme coming up.
Don't forget your boat.
All right, Mike. Speaking of letting you get to sleep, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on all of your socials and your YouTube channel? What's all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely. Just look me up on YouTube. Gotta Love Them Movies, GOTTA. There's been a lot of discussion about this. It is GOTTA, Gotta Love Them Movies. Or if you want to find me on Twitter, follow me at GLTMovies. That's pretty much it. I mean, I could give you my phone number or email address, but...
you don't have to do that.
It's probably not going
to
help anything.
But if you have other stuff you want
to... How can Pennywise find you? I gotta give you your boat back.
That was a little Yoda on that one.
He was a little Yoda.
That, but I'm looking at a picture of the Addams Family up on the wall right now. So all this like creepy memorabilia stuff surrounding me right now is not at 2:30 in the morning.
We are a heartbeat away from Halloween, Mike. You gotta get into the spirit.
And I get to have Halloween before you get to Halloween by 3 hours.
Yeah,
I guess that's true. So, yeah, is there anything that you have coming up? Live events or anything for any of our New York listeners?
Both for New York and San Diego listeners. I've got classes to teach Sunday, this upcoming Sunday at Old Town. Keith, you got to help me out here.
Old Town Improv Company, Sunday, September 17th. You're teaching a drop-in class. I don't know the time.
Just go to, what's the website? Old Town Comedy, Old Town Improv?
Yeah, look up Old Town Improv Company in San Diego.
Yeah, all the information will be right there. So teaching that, doing a show later that night on Sunday night. If you're going to be in LA on Monday, a week from yesterday, I don't even know what day it is. This upcoming Monday.
It's a week from yesterday, Monday, September 18th.
Thank you. Monday, September 18th, I have a show in Los Angeles at the Io West Theater in the Del Close Theater, 10 o'clock at night. So come check that out. It's a free show. If you're in Portland, the following Sunday and Monday, so whatever the date is after the 18th, 17th, 18th, the next weekend, Sunday and Monday, I have two shows in Portland.
The 24th and the 25th?
Thank you. I feel like you have a calendar right in front of you.
It's called a computer.
You're on a comedy tour, it sounds like.
On a bit of a comedy tour this weekend. Yeah. Or for the next few weekends. Well, cool. And then back in New York, I've got more drop-in classes to teach the People's Improv Theater. All the information could be found at thepit-nyc.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, more drop-in classes.
Great.
Follow me at Solo Improv, at GLT Movies. I've got all my show dates posted galore.
All right. Well, maybe I'll try and make that LA show. Keith,
yeah, man.
What's your stuff?
Yeah, you should follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. If you don't, you'll float. Also,
that's not the quote, Keith. That's not the quote.
No. Pennywise is just a fan. Follow him or you'll float down here. I'm probably just like bleeding followers after this. Also check out Tonight in San Diego. We're back. We just kicked off our final block. We just did our first episode last night, our first taping. I believe our segment has already dropped online, so check that out. And then for the next 11 Mondays, check us out at the Jeffrey downtown San Diego, 7:30 p.m. It should be a lot of fun. Tonight in San Diego. Get tickets at tonightinsandiego.com.
All right. You can follow me individually at BC Cassidy, V as in Victor Cassidy. You can follow the show at Jabber Podcast. You can find the show's archives and RSS feed at jabberthedrone.podbean.com. You can email us with any questions or inquiries or comments on anything we talked about here at jabberthedrone@gmail.com. But you can also find our show and subscribe to us and listen at Podbean, which is our main archives, but you can also find us at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, and the Windows Podcast Network, and Google Play. You can read my movie reviews that I do weekly for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. And we have friends who also do podcasts that you should be listening to. Mike Fallick from last week, listen to his podcast, Let's Start a Cult, which a lot of the audio that we recorded at the front of the show, I had to cut for time, but he's going to be posting his hot takes on some of the questions he gave us on his episodes. So listen to that. Listen to Rod and Denise at the Listening Party, and listen to Patrick and Dennis at Almost Educational, and Patrick and his father at Make Dad Read Comics, and Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums podcast, and Denise over at Mascot Diaries. Without further ado, thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This has been so much fun. Let's do it again.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And on that note, let's give it to Gosling. That turned out weird. Maybe I'll do new Pennywise.
Give it to Gosling or he'll float.
Bye.